This is Mac Format This Week. 30 minutes of news, reviews, Q&A, and features from the world of the Macintosh, iPod, and iPhone. Coming up on this edition, we show you a great tool and some fancy tips to maintain a healthy Mac.
If you've got a Mac that you've had for a few years, it's like kind of giving it a whole spring clean. It's got a new spring in its step, and it just kind of bounds along. It's a bit like kind of having your old Mac back, you know, the one you first got when it was really quick and everything ran really well.
Graham Barlow with the essential Mac health check. And just how good is Apple's Aperture 2?
I think Apple's got things right second time around. Now there's a viable alternative to Adobe's Lightroom.
Mark Sparrow reviews Apple's powerful photo editing and management tool. All that and more on this edition of Mac Format This Week. With the resources of Mac Format Magazine, this is Mac Format This Week. Hello, everyone. I'm Brad Gibson. It's spring and time for a little TLC for your Mac. Let's just call it spring cleaning. By observing a few rules and routines, you can ensure a smooth ride every day and a long, hassle-free life for your Mac. And with that in mind, Mac Format Magazine has created a handy guide in the May issue entitled The Essential Mac Health Check. 10 pages of problem solving, how to handle updates, cleaning your Mac, and regular maintenance tasks. We thought we'd focus on just one of those areas in highlighting the feature, and Mac Format editor Graham Barlow joins us from the newsroom to talk about daily, weekly, and monthly maintenance tasks you can perform to maintain a healthy working Mac. Graham, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
I'm good. Let's get into this, and there are quite a few of them, and let's just begin with the first one, and that is a good rule is always to keep documents in folders and not laying out on your desktop because you'll have a much faster working Mac.
Well, that's right. It seems like a simple thing, this, but if you just keep your Mac a bit better organized, it actually runs faster. Especially if you're anything like me, you'll have a desktop that's just kind of full of files and icons. If you take them off your desktop, put them into proper folders, you'll find your whole Mac speeds up. And it's to do with the way that your Mac draws the desktop. Every single file on the desktop has to be done as a separate window, which will, you know, it slows the whole system down if it's continually having to redraw those windows every time you move things around.
Right.
So just a simple thing like keeping your files off the desktop can actually improve the speed of your Mac.
Okay, our second on the list is buying an external hard drive to back up, and especially using Time Machine. Why is this important to speed up your Mac that you use an external hard drive?
Anything that can keep your data kind of off your main boot drive is a good thing because it stops that drive being written to back and forth all the time. And it might seem like a trivial thing, but the wear and tear on the hard drive will definitely affect its performance over time.
Right.
If you're having a Time Machine backup, that should be a kind of separate hard drive that you just plug in for Time Machine usage. But if you can also backup and generally work from another drive to your main boot drive, it will speed up your Mac.
Okay, now another thing is emptying your trash on a regular basis. I wouldn't personally think that emptying the trash is really going to make any difference in the world, but I guess it does.
You should always keep your hard drive about 10% free for it to be running smoothly. That's the drive of your system on your boot drive. If it's not got that 10% of free space on it, then it does really start to slow down. And if you're carrying around a couple of gig of files in your trash, then that can really slow down your system if it's kind of pushing it on its upper limit of capacity. The other thing to look out for is your iLife applications. They've got their own individual trash cans, and if those aren't emptied on a regular basis because they're separate to the main system trash, you can also be losing space there. And if your drive fills up, it just makes your whole system slower.
I was actually with my sister about a year ago and went into her trash. She had over 50 gigabytes of trash, hadn't emptied it in like something like 7 or 8 months. I couldn't believe it.
I know. She's amazed by how much quicker her system ran when you emptied that trash.
Exactly. Okay, let's move on to clearing out caches. And if you've been using your Mac for a long time, its caches and log files may have built up and could be eating away valuable space. So what can we do to clear these out?
Yeah, well, first of all, these caches are the temporary files that your Mac creates. Whenever you kind of open a new document, you do some work on something, temporary files get created to help you do your tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of end up hanging around. You don't need them anymore. They just build up and up.
All right, so if these caches are not being cleared out, what do we need to do to perform that task?
Well, you can do it yourself, which is great. The best way to do it is to use a program called Onyx, and it's a free download. It's on our disk this month, or you can get it from www.titanium.free.fr. You just need to make sure you get the right version for the version of OS 10 you're running. So if you've got Leopard, you must download the Leopard version, because they don't work across all the different versions.
Okay, so once you download it, what do you do with Onyx?
The first thing you should do is head towards the tab called Maintenance. And in there, there's another folder called Scripts. And if you look in there, you can see three settings for daily scripts, weekly scripts, and monthly scripts. And you can just tick the ones you want and click the Execute button, and it will run those cron scripts that we were talking about before. You can also look at the launch services, and if you rebuild those, that database for that, it'll rebuild the links between your documents and the applications that open them. So if you've been having trouble clicking on a file and opening, then you might be able to fix the problem by using the launch services rebuilding option. The final thing is to look in the cleaning section. Here you can clear out caches and logs from all elements of the system. It not only serves to streamline your data, but it can also solve problems with corrupted data. If you look in the user section, you can see a whole load of things you can click on to clear out, like the applications, preference system panels, and the like. That's a really great feature there if you've been having problems with a particular program not opening, or even with your Mac not starting.
So after you've run Onyx, Graham, have you noticed a really big difference in speed and performance?
Yeah, on a new system, you're not really going to notice that much change. But if you've got a Mac that you've had for a few years and it's been kind of, you know, clogging up with data over the years, it's like kind of giving it a whole spring clean. It's got a new spring in its step, and it just kind of bounds along. I mean, it's a bit like kind of having your old Mac back, you know, the one you first got when it was really quick and everything ran really well.
Right.
Just one simple run through of this program and you can have that kind of system back again.
Very good. Okay, some great maintenance tasks, including a great detail of Onyx. You can find Onyx on the May DVD of Mac Format Magazine, and the maintenance tasks appear on page 28, so you'll want to check those out. Graham, thanks so much for going over the maintenance tasks. There's a lot more in the Essential Mac Health Check. Thanks again.
No problem. See you next time.
Graham Barlow is the editor of Mac Format Magazine. The 10-page feature, The Essential Mac Health Check, appears on page 26 in the May issue of Mac Format. We all know about iPhoto, the consumer-level product that lets you catalog and edit digital photos. It's perfect for the Mac user who collects photos on holiday or on special occasions. But what if you were someone who had thousands of photos, say a pro or semi-pro photographer or collector, and you wanted an ultra-fast photo editing and management system? That's when you'd want to look at Apple's Aperture 2, and that's what we'll do right now with Mark Sparrow. He's a contributing writer to Mac Format who wrote a two-page review in the May issue regarding Aperture and version 2, its latest iteration. Mark joins us right now to tell us what this new version is all about and if it's right for you. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Mark, let's get into what Aperture 2 is in layman's terms. Tell us.
It's really one big database for raw images and other kinds of image formats so that you can keep a tab on what you've got, what you want to do with it, how you want to output it. It's a bit like iTunes, but for images.
Now, we said a minute ago that Aperture 2 is very different than iPhoto. Tell us exactly how it is different.
Well, it's like iPhoto on steroids, if that makes sense. It is able to handle a lot of images. It can search through them very quickly, and it does this using metadata. And metadata is just pieces of information that are actually planted in the header file, image file, so that you can search for things like what camera was it taken with, what exposure was used, what shutter speed, what ISO setting, and even more exotic things like what the GPS coordinates were of a picture, or who took it, or where it was taken, all that kind of thing.
Right.
So it really is a giant database, but you can also edit the images in raw format, and that's important because it does so without destroying the image quality.
Now, there's another product out there that is a competitor to Aperture 2, and that is Lightroom from Adobe. Compare the two products, if you can, just briefly.
Well, they're very similar in what they do. Aperture has a prettier interface. Lightroom is a sort of dark, blackish interface, whereas Aperture's the sort of clean, white Apple interface. But they basically do the same kind of thing. There's not a lot between them. But with Aperture 2, things change a little bit, because Aperture 2 is a lot faster, it's a lot easier to use than it used to be, and so I think it puts both products on a sort of level pegging.
All right, now let's talk about Aperture 2 in terms of an actual review of the product. Aperture 2 is the new version. It's got lots of new features. Tell us about the top three new features of this product.
Well, I think we'd best stick to the top three because there are 100 new features in Aperture 2 and quite significant. But the first one for me is the interface. The interface is now a lot more logical to use. It's got a three-tab inspector, which is for projects, metadata and adjustments. So projects just keeps, you can see what all your pictures are, how they're organized into albums, that kind of thing. Metadata's got all the things recorded, like the timestamps, the GPS coordinates, the camera settings, and finally the adjustments is where you can basically edit the image, and it's really, really much easier to use.
Mm-hmm.
The second feature is the new RAW engine. Now, the first RAW engine on Aperture 1 was really a little bit flaky. It didn't always produce good conversions. This latest RAW engine 2 from Apple is really, really good. The quality is good, the speed is good, and it competes well with Adobe's own Camera Raw plugin. I think the third one we'd point out is the editing tools. Apple has added a recovery slider, which brings back the highlights if they've burnt out a little bit. There's a vibrancy slider, and there's a vignette control. So if your lens causes shading at the corner, you can use the slider to take that away, or indeed to add it in if you want to have a kind of sort of moody feel to your image. There's also a new retouching brush, which works extremely well. And remember, you're doing this on a raw image, so each time you apply it, you're not degrading the image. It only happens once you convert it from raw into JPEG or Photoshop.
All right, now let's go over the pros and cons of Aperture 2 as you saw them. And let's begin with the pluses. What do you like the most about this product when you reviewed it?
Well, that interface is much easier to use. The workflow is much easier to use. It just seems a bit more intuitive, a bit more what you'd expect from Apple.
Mm-hmm.
The RAW conversions, when I looked at the quality of the RAW conversions, they were much better. Apple's really managed to nail this one down. And remember that the RAW conversion technology is actually built into the OS. It's not dependent on the application itself. And finally, the one thing that really needed to be attended to is the speed. Aperture is much, much faster to start up, version 2. It runs faster, and it can perform a little better, I think, on machines that aren't quite top spec. The first version really was like I think I said in the review, it's like an elephant wading through treacle.
Right, exactly. Okay, now, but you bring up a really good point, and that is it's much faster all around, but some of the minuses, and one of the minuses is that you really need a strong, fast Mac to make it work well.
Well, I think that's true of any, whether you're using a Mac or a PC, any kind of image editing, it takes a lot of data, especially with big format, raw format files with a large number of pixels in. You really do need a tough computer. You need a lot of memory, you need some good disk space, and fast moving around of the data. So I think that would apply to anything. So you're going to do this kind of work, you do need a good Mac.
And finally, one of the negatives you had was the sharpening routine seems a little weak. Explain that.
Well, although the sharpening actually works reasonably well, it is actually hidden. You've actually got to invoke the sharpening panel in the inspector, in the editing inspector. And I can't for the life of me understand why Apple didn't actually put it in there as a fixed option permanently. I think that's something that may well change. But version 2.1 is out, and as updates come out, I think that these things will be addressed. And one thing I should mention about version 2.1 is that now Apple has made it open with a plug-in architecture, which it's made available to third parties. So we're going to start seeing all kinds of Photoshop plugins actually being able to work in RAW mode on Aperture. So that's significant, and it's something that Adobe's responded to because they've just announced the release of a beta of Lightroom 2, and that looks as if that's going to have a plug-in architecture as well.
Wow, so now we're going to get into the battle between the plugins for both of these products.
Well, I think the professional and semi-professional photographic market is such a big prize. In all my years of writing about Apple, I've never known them to be so enthusiastic about pushing one of their products. They want this to be the mainstream. Now, one problem there is, of course, Aperture only works on a Mac, whereas Lightroom works on a PC as well, and some photographers do use PCs, but a surprisingly large number do use Macs. But they really want a big slice of the market here, and I think Aperture 2 is probably well placed to get it for them.
All right, so all around, you gave Aperture 2 a rating of 4.5 out of 5 stars. You really think it has had a major improvement over the years?
Oh, yes. I mean, it is. There's no question. This is a completely different program to Aperture 1. Apple has addressed most of the issues and most of the criticisms that were leveled at Aperture 1, and it has effectively, I think, dealt with them. So it was worthy of its 4.5 points. Couldn't quite give it 5. There are one or two drawbacks, for example, such as that sharpening feature, or Apple's tends to be a little bit slow on updating its RAW format. So when a new camera comes out with a new RAW format, it does take some time for them to actually update things. So of course, if you've bought a nice new camera and you've got to wait 6 months before it will work with Aperture, you're not going to be happy. Other than that, it probably would have been nudging those 5 stars.
All right, Mark, thanks for going over Apple's Aperture 2, version 2. 4.5 out of 5 stars he gave it in the review. Thanks so much for joining us and going over it.
Pleasure.
Mark Sparrow is a contributing writer to MacFormat magazine. His review of Aperture 2 appears on page 82 in the May issue of MacFormat. On every episode of MacFormat this week, we try and inform you on everything to do with your Mac, iPod, or iPhone. From interviews with newsmakers to reviews of products to features in the magazine each month, we try and give you a balanced, informative, but entertaining look at everything related to Apple's 3 platforms. But we know that we can always do something better. That's why we'd love to hear from you. Whether it's a criticism or suggestion, don't hesitate to email us. Our address for comments and suggestions is macformatthisweek@futurenet.co.uk. We'll respond to each and every email and even read some of your opinions on future episodes. Again, our email address is macformatthisweek@futurenet.co.uk, and we look forward to hearing from you soon. A better way to move windows and a measuring tool for graphic designers. Those are the two shareware picks we'll review today with Craig Grinnell. Hello again, Craig.
Hi, how are you doing, Brad?
Very good. Let's talk about the two products we'll review today, and that is Mondo Mouse and X-Scope. And let's begin with Mondo Mouse, version 1.4.2. You can get it at atomicbird.com/Mondo Mouse, and you can get to it from our Enhanced Podcast link. Craig, what is Mondo Mouse?
It's basically a system preferences pane that enables you to get around the limitation of macOS 10's approach to moving and resizing windows.
Well, now that sounds like a lot, but let's go right into that. What do you mean by that? What exactly does it do in detail?
Well, the thing is, if you're using macOS 10, you can only drag windows around via the toolbar, not any other part of the window.
Right.
And you can only resize via the drag handle at the bottom right of a window, as in a window that can be resized. And the thing is, other operating systems tend to be a little bit more flexible than that.
So how does Mondo Mouse change the way that this works?
Well, it works on the basis of user-definable modifiers for a move or a resize from any point. So, for example, for the remove command, you can set, say, command and option together as the modifier. And when you hold that down and hover your mouse cursor over a window, a little transparent blue border appears around the window. And then you can click drag the window from any point, not just the toolbar. It kind of sounds a bit more complex than it actually is, but it's very, very simple in use. It makes moving windows in particular much, much faster. And the visual feedback is really useful because it provides an indication of what's going to happen. And also in some cases where the application isn't entirely compatible with everything, a red border shows you if it's not going to work as expected.
And is that often the case?
Not really. Mondo Mouse is pretty compatible. The move command works with pretty much everything I threw at it. The resize is a bit less successful. In my case, it didn't work with Office 2004, which I'm still using now and again. It didn't work with most of the apps in Adobe CS3 suite. Suite and also GarageBand, but it worked with most of the other stuff. And for me, the Move command is actually the real benefit of the application anyway.
What I really like about it, from what I can see, is the ability to resize the window without switching applications. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, it's a pretty versatile app. It's got no bloat either. All of the extra features, like the one you just mentioned, are really kind of useful essentials as opposed to just add-ons as well. I think it's definitely worth a shot for anyone that finds Mac OS X a bit limiting in the way that you can work with Windows.
Okay, so Mondo Mouse from Atomic Bird Software, version 1.4.2. It's $15 or £8, worth taking a look at. And Craig, you gave it how many stars?
It got 4 out of 5. The limitation regarding the incompatibility with some applications meant that you couldn't really give it full marks. But it certainly comes recommended, I would say.
Okay, 4 out of 5 for Mondo Mouse. Worth taking a look at, definitely. Let's move on to our Mac Choice Award for this month. 5 out of 5. And it is Xscope version 2.0 from the guys at Icon Factory. A lot of us know who they are. Now, this is a set of measuring tools for screen-based designers, right?
Yeah, that's right. It offers 7 different tools in all, including on-screen rulers, guides, frames, and a few more complex tools as well. For example, there's a tool for web designers called Screens, and what that enables you to do is see common real estate areas across a range of web browsers. And the interface is really, really simple for this. Basically, you've got this on-screen screen, and on the right-hand side, there are a bunch of buttons that correspond to different web browsers. And as you click them, the visible real estate area just reduces down. It's very, very handy. And there's also a loop tool, which provides a zoomed-in window that shows what's under your cursor at any one time. And it has various shortcuts for sending color values to the clipboard.
But it's the new dimension tool, the one that finds dimensions on anything on screen instantly, that really seems to get you most excited, right?
Yeah, that's definitely the case. First, I think it's really good to see Xscope's creators thinking of something genuinely unique and new for an update. I mean, this is a 2.0 app, and quite often these days you find people sort of just adding on version numbers, and you know they don't really add too much to it. But this is a major, major new tool for Xscope.
Right.
And the way it works is it's like those sort of laser beam measuring devices you get, but it's on screen.
Mm-hmm.
So basically you hold the cursor static, and then vertical and horizontal beams are emitted from your cursor, and they terminate upon hitting areas of real distinct contrast. So in other words, if you've like got a mock-up for a web design layout or something like that, and you're wanting to measure stuff to put it into a style sheet, like measure width and height values of certain portions of the layout, you can use this tool, and it's really, really quick. And it's also got a mode called Shrink, which enables you to drag a selection, and then the selection subsequently details its dimensions, and you've even got options then for copying values to the clipboard or sending a grab of your selection to desktop. It's a really versatile, utterly brilliant tool.
Well, it really sounds like it. You can also watch a QuickTime movie of this dimension tool, which Craig just talked about. You can find it at iconfactory.com/software/Xscope, and that is basically the link that you'll get to from our Enhanced podcast if you want to see what we're talking about. Now, all this sounds great and really useful for screen designers, Craig, but it also sounds like there are a lot of tools and options. So is Xscope easy to use?
Yeah, I think it's very easy to use, actually. The interface that Icon Factory has produced for this application is really very, very polished indeed. You can toggle tools via a floating toolbar. There are also menu bar icons, and when you click those, you can toggle on and off any of the individual tools. Most of the tools also have keyboard shortcuts for accessing the really important options. And also, the thing is, and the most important thing, I suppose, is that the majority of the tools are really intuitive to use, and they offer the options and the feedback that you'd really expect. And for example, the rulers tool, you can lengthen the rulers, you can rotate them, markers show up on screen, providing feedback when you're a certain distance away from the start of the ruler to the cursor's current location, all that sort of thing. So it's very, very simple to use, which is great. It saves you time. You don't have to waste time learning how to use the app.
It sounds like to me this is the type of product that you're going to use a lot in tandem with some other piece of software, such as Illustrator, Photoshop, InDesign, that kind of thing. Am I right there?
Yeah, that's definitely the case. Like I said earlier, certainly for designing a website, for example, what web designers tend to do is they've got their mock-up, and then they need to sort of take out some of the graphics and then define areas in style sheets.
Right.
Now, the thing is, you've got your layout there, and even if you've figured out like a baseline grid, all that sort of thing, you still have to measure certain components, like how big is the masthead, how big is the navigation area. And the way most designers tend to do that is they use the marquee tool and the info palette.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a long, tedious process. But with the dimensions tool, all you do is you hover the cursor for a bit, the little lasers come out, and bosh, there you go, you've got your pixel dimensions. So suddenly you've saved yourself a whole lot of time. And I reckon, just one web design layout, you've pretty much probably made your money back on this app. It's really, really good. very, very useful.
Yeah, speaking of money, Xscope costs $27. That's about £14. But you think it's worth the money all the way around?
Absolutely. I mean, just the Dimensions tool alone, which you may have gathered, I'm quite excited about.
Yeah, right?
That's really, really worth the outlay. Just that one tool is worth £14 of my money. But the thing is, you've got all these other things as well. You know, you've got the rulers, which are very useful. The on-screen guides are handy for having like sort of a system-wide guide if you're sort of creating a layout in a couple of different apps or something like that. Or, for example, you could use it so you could set up guides for a layout in something like Photoshop and then make a direct comparison with a web browser. And you can save all sorts of different sets. It's really, really good application. And I think pretty much all screen designers will find that it pays for itself very, very quickly.
All right, Xscope version 2.0. It costs £14, a 5 out of 5 Mac choice from Craig. Again, it's a measuring tool for graphic designers. If you're doing graphic work, it's really worth taking a look at. All right, Craig, thanks so much for going over Mondo Mouse and Xscope in the May issue of Mac Format.
Okay, see you next month.
Craig Grinnell reviews shareware for Mac Format magazine. His reviews of Mondo Mouse and Xscope in the May issue begin on page 100. It's time for questions and answers again, and Trevor Middleton rejoins us. Hello, Trevor.
Hi there, Brad. How are you today?
Very good. First, Trevor, we got an email the other day from a listener who took exception with me criticizing you for your level of knowledge a few episodes back, and he reminded me of a famous quote that goes, "Knowledge is a process of piling up facts. Wisdom lies in their simplification."
Yes, as Sherlock Holmes said, first eliminate the impossible, then whatever remains, however improbable, must be the answer.
Oh, that's simplification in itself. But Trevor, the interesting thing is that he emailed me back and reminded me of a quote from the French writer and Nobel laureate André Gide, who said, "Believe those who are seeking the truth, doubt those who find it."
Yes.
So you really can't win for losing, can you?
Well, that's it, Brad. I always say if brains were gunpowder, you'd just about have enough to make a small farting noise.
What? I'm sorry. Is that blood coming down my back? Oh, jeez. All right. Well, I guess I had that coming after doing this for two shows in a row. All right. Let's move right on. You can mail Trevor with your questions, comments, criticisms, whatever you'd like, at machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And please remember to tell us where you're from and, more importantly, how to pronounce your name if it's a difficult one. And sometimes people think it's difficult and sometimes they don't. But please let us know if it is. Question one is from Nigel Hartley, serving with the British Armed Forces in Germany. He wrote us, "Since updating to macOS 10.5.2, better known as Leopard, I've been having trouble extending my airport network using WDS, or what is known as Wireless Distribution System. I have a late 2006 24-inch 2.33 gigahertz iMac as my main machine, plus a 15-inch PowerBook. Trevor, what's the problem here?"
I must say I've come across a number of listeners, and in fact clients of my own, who've been having a few problems since updating to macOS 10.5.2. And I understand that Apple even now are working on the 10.5.3 update, which presumably is going to offer fixes for those people. Now, in the meantime, Nigel, I'd suggest rolling back your system to 10.5.1 using the archive and install option from the Leopard installation DVD. Now, that is available if you click on the options button when you've chosen the location for the installation. If you also choose preserve users and network settings, all your data will be transferred to the new installation. After doing that, of course, you'll have to download and install the macOS 10.5.1 updater from Apple's website in order to restore your system to its previous state. If that doesn't work, then think about reformatting and reinstalling, but let us know how you get on with that one, Nigel, and we can take it from there. Brad.
All right, question two comes to us from Grant Weston in Hampshire in the UK. He writes, "I've been advised that it's good security to have a non-administrator account as my main account. Is that true? And if so, what are the benefits?"
Okay, well, it's certainly true that having separate accounts for different users helps to keep your Mac better organized, since each user has their own desktop, documents folder, music folder, and so on. It's also a good idea to have non-administrator accounts for, say, your kids, so they can't accidentally delete essential system files. I work in a school as well, and we have non-administrator accounts for most of the kids, so they can't do the same. However, macOS 10 already sets limits on what even an admin user can do by disabling something called the root user. The root user, or the super user as it's sometimes called, is a user with access privileges covering the whole of the system, which is why Apple has disabled it by default. You can enable it, but Apple recommends you do it only for specific tasks and for limited periods. So your administrator account is already limited, so you don't need to set yourself a managed account. It's fine as it is. Brad.
And finally, question three comes from Dylan Jagroup in Halifax. He writes us, I had a problem with iTunes on my old MacBook Pro and 30GB iPod. When my iPod or iTunes got to a certain song, it would play half of the song and then skip to another track by a completely different band for about 30 seconds. I have now upgraded to another MacBook Pro and an iPhone. I ripped my CDs to iTunes again, and it is still doing the same thing. How can I fix this? Trevor.
Okay, well, Dylan, as you say, this has happened on two different Macs and two different music players, and it happens to the same tracks each time. You might want to try ripping one of those CDs again. This time, try turning on error correction in iTunes. You can do that by going to the Preferences, click on Advanced, followed by the Importing tab, and then Enable error correction. Now, if your CDs are badly damaged, the import might take a while. It might not even happen at all. But you should get a result that will play better. And once you've tried that with one CD, make sure it plays okay, then try it with the rest. Brad.
Now, you see, wisdom does lie in true simplification. Thanks so much, Trevor.
No problem, Brad. See you next time.
You can email Trevor with your questions to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And please remember to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. And that's it for another edition of Mac Format This Week. My thanks to Graham Barlow, Mark Sparrow, Craig Grinnell, and Trevor Middleton. Our associate producer is Misha Sakleropoulou. You can always send us your comments and suggestions to macformatthisweek@futurenet.co.uk. Join us again with our next episode on Monday, the 28th of April. Until then, I'm Brad Gibson. Thanks for joining us.